Welcome to the Pastured Pig Podcast,
where we share the successes and challenges of raising pigs on pasture.
We talk to producers all over the country,
from small homesteads to large commercial pasture operations.
Whether you're new to pastured pigs or have been raising hogs for decades,
we hope you hear new ideas and new perspectives on pasturing hogs.
Here's your host, Troy McClung.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Pastured Pig Podcast. As Kelly said, I'm your host, Troy. And you may be wondering, now, why don't he write? So I got to say, the rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated, but they have not been unmerited. The last 2 months have been a little tough for me when it comes to voice. I've had I had the flu here just most recently, which I couldn't go 30 seconds without coughing my brains out. But before that, just had some issues. If you've watched any of the YouTube videos in the last quarter, you'll see there's a lot of editing when I'm talking because just coughing fits and then just a throat issue, which I think I've got resolved. I won't get into all the medical details, but I think we've got it resolved. So at least I can get back into doing recordings without hacking, coughing, gagging, all those type of things. So glad to be back. And first of all, I want to say thank you for the patience of all of our Patreon supporters who actually still stuck with us on Patreon when we hadn't even done a podcast in the last 2 months. So thank you all for that. I appreciate that. That doesn't go unrecognized. And man, I just thank you all. Yeah, more than you can imagine. I really appreciate it. Just reinvigorates me to press through and keep going on this when I feel like I just need to hang up the towel. So some of the people that we've did interviews with here in January before all this really hit the fan, I want to say thank you for your patience and me delaying getting your interviews out. So what I'm going to do and kind of do what I did last time that I had a issue, I've got three interviews that I've got already bagged. So you're going to hear the first one today, and the game plan is just to go ahead and do bumpers for the next two, and we'll line them out 3 weeks in a row. So today, you're hearing this one on Monday, Eclipse Day. If this isn't the apocalypse and the end of the world, then we'll have two more podcasts 2 weeks from now. So Monday to Monday to Monday. So without any further ado, let's get into our interview that we have today. Today we're talking with Stephanie Walker, and she's with Vincent Farms and also River V Growers down in Texas. And I had a really good discussion about her on-farm store, the success she's had with chickens. And again, I know this is Pastured Pig Podcast, but we'll talk about that a little bit because of the polyculture aspect of it and then how she's farming full-time and really trying to make her farm store and her farm a destination location. Okay, so without any further discussion, let's get in and talk with Stephanie. Welcome to the podcast, Stephanie.
Hey, Troy. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. So you are in, and we were talking about this before we started the recording, Stephanie is in a place called Point Blank, Texas, which I think is just a fantastic name for a town.
It's absolutely fantastic. If you were to see it, you would love it just as much as I do. Yeah, so most people know us because we're right next to Lake Livingston. So if you're familiar with fishing or anything like that, it's a good lake to do that off. If you're not, it's 50 miles north of Houston.
Yeah. I got to say, I recognize that body of water, but I didn't know why I recognized it.
Right.
So I'm like, Livingston, oh, yeah, there's something associated with it. Yeah. And I got to say, so I've been to Houston before, and well, I'm not a fan, but that was in downtown Houston. So tell me, Point Blank is nothing like downtown Houston.
Oh, absolutely not. Super, super rural town, very small, and nothing like downtown Houston.
Very good. That's good to hear. Yeah, I was looking, I'm just here on Google Map doing a little bit of eyeballing before we started talking, and one of the first things that popped up on Google Maps when I zoomed in on Point Blank was the Bullet Grill House.
So yummy too, and very fun, and they have lots of good live music. Yeah, that's only about 10 minutes away from our farm.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. All right, so tell me about Vincent Farms. What do you have going on there? Kind of give me that that overview summary first.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're raising pastured proteins and then seasonal produce. So with our proteins, We're raising chickens, swine, beef, and lamb. And then our veggies, they just about the most 10 popular veggies you can think of, tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you probably have a pretty good growing season down there, don't you?
We have a great growing season, though I will say the last 3 years have been very challenging, both for plants and animals. We've had freezing temperatures for more than 36 hours. And I know that doesn't sound crazy to the people that live up north, but for us down here, it's absolutely bonkers. And then our droughts, we've had droughts the last 3 years. So hay production to feed these animals, it's been a little bit hard, but we just got 10 inches of rain this last week.
Oh, wow. Oh my goodness. Yeah. That'd wipe out West Virginia.
After 36 hours.
Gracious. Yeah. That would wipe out West Virginia if you got 10 inches within a couple of days. My goodness. And you all have been dealing, I mean, obviously the drought, but temperature-wise, you guys have been equal to like the threshold of hell the last couple summers, haven't you?
Hottest summers on record, yeah. And the almanac says the same for this summer. So I'm just mentally preparing. That's all you can do.
Yeah, something to look forward to. So what is, what's the land like around there? I know Texas is a huge state, and you can go different places of Texas and you can find all kinds of different topography and ecosystems and stuff. So since you're further east, are you more, well, you're not desert, right? So you're kind of more temperate.
Yeah, absolutely. So we call where I'm at the piney woods. So there's a lot of acidic soil where we are, a lot of caliche and clay, especially where we're raising our hogs right now. The soil is really, really compacted, and that's one of the benefits about running pigs in these pastures that we're doing. We're actually using the pigs to break down the soil to then plant gardens.
So the
soil is very hard to work with, but the pigs are amazing at amending it for us.
Okay. So tell me about the land. So as far as the size of it, and obviously you've got, if I was counting properly, you've got four different protein sources that obviously require a decent amount of land. So how do you have all that laid out?
Yeah, so our pigs are in 1 acre pastures, plots, and then the cows and stuff, they graze another farm that's adjacent to where the pigs are, is the same with the lambs. And then chickens, we just run the chickens right behind the cows. So the only thing that's separate is the pigs. Everything else runs together. The sheep, the chickens, and the cows, they all run together, kind of like a Joel Salatin system.
Very good. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So excellent. So the 1 acre paddocks that you have for the pigs, is that multiple or is it just one paddock they're in?
We started out with training them to electric fence, and we would rotate them three separate paddocks within those 1 acre pastures. But what I found, especially with my sows, is, I mean, if you've raised pigs, you know, they're a little naughty. and once they figure out that they can break something or go underneath it, they're going to do it every single time. So what we've been doing instead of breaking them up is we've been letting them root the pastures up, get ready to plant, and then build a next pasture, and just letting them do that over and over for us, getting the ground ready.
Oh, very good. So using them as a pioneering type situation where they're preparing ground, moving on and taking on something else that hadn't been touched yet.
Absolutely. So the 1 acre pasture that I'm speaking of right now, those guys, there's 13 feeder hogs in there, and they'll go for processing in March, and then we'll slope that and drain it and get it back right. And that'll actually be planted, and I'll probably do either watermelon or corn, some summer crop in that pasture.
Ooh, yeah. So what you're looking for there is maximum disturbance. And I assume you're probably not on much of a slope. So erosion is a non-issue at that point.
Absolutely.
Very cool. All right. So what are you coming back and reseeding? So when you get these guys out in March, what's your recipe that you're reseeding?
So that one pasture we'll till and, I'll probably disc and then till, and I'll leave it be. And then we'll flat plant because I'm going to do those summer veggies. So I actually won't do any cover crop or anything. I probably should, but I'm not going to, because this is the second year I've planted and I kind of know what that ground needs. It needs that rest. And then the other field that our sows are in, that pasture, we're actually going to plant that. We'll probably do some sort of wildlife mix. Hopefully I can get some clover up before then, because that pasture will be grazed by some dairy cows.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I love that idea. Love that idea of using the animals to do the hard work of that less than hospitable soil.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about your herd then. So let's talk about breed choice and numbers that you have, and kind of how you handle your breeding and how you go through your year with your pigs.
Sure. So we actually lucked into this thing, I would say, because about 5 years ago, we started raising our first round of show hogs as a, my husband and myself as a couple. He has grown up doing that. His father is a reputable person in the community to get show hogs from. So we kind of got some of the coals, and we, after we tasted that meat and how we had been raising them on pasture, we were like, we're onto something. This is delicious. So we lucked into the genetics there. His father, is very, very good with genetics. So we raise crossbred hogs, some are higher on the Hamp end, some are higher on the Burke end. And every coal that we get out of the litter, we turn into a feeder hog. And the ones that make show hogs go on to make show hogs, and they're sold or our kids show them.
Oh, yeah. So that makes for a good revenue stream for each of the litters, and not just have to worry about feeding them out and the cash flow issues that come from that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If our sows can produce, you know, normally these higher bred show hogs will give us about 8 to 10 piglets, where I know some pasture breeds will give us more than that. But if we're getting 8 to 10 every single time that we're having a litter, then we sell the top 5 or 6, and that leaves us a few, and we're running 5 sows at a time. So over time, we have enough feeder hogs to feed ourselves and everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you use boars or AI, a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. We just kept a boar from a litter that we had in September. He's super nice. We're super excited about him. He has a lot more Burke in him than we've ran on these last sows. So super, super excited about that. But yes, we do AI. And as far as the show genetics, I don't know what he's using. I wish I would have got those names before we got on the podcast. But anyways, yeah, so he does a little AI, and then we have a boar in the pasture with some of the sows that we have.
Yeah, okay. So with running 5 or 6 sows and farrowing, are you just breeding them once a year? Are you trying to cycle them twice?
We're just breeding once a year right now, and the main reason for that is it goes back to those litters for the show. Mm-hmm. We try to breed for our specific county show, which is in March, so the litters are around fall. And then they're ready to go for the show for those kids in March and April. So once a year right now, probably would like to get up to 2 times. But as a woman, you know, 1 a year is probably good. And I feel comfortable and my sows seem happy. So I kind of like sticking with what we've got going now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Stephen, let me ask you, is this a full-time gig for you?
Yes. Farming is a full-time gig for me.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Excellent. So, so how long have you been doing this? Are you a first generation farmer, or is this in your blood? Has this been passed down from the family?
I consider myself a first generation farmer. My grandfather did raise Burgess heifers and he had bulls and he sold some semen and stuff, but I feel like I wasn't really involved in that. So it's hard to say that it's a generational thing. My husband now, he is a third generation, pig farmer, and they raise some really, really nice show heifers and steers too. But yes, I'm a first generation farmer.
All right. So why did you get into this? Did you marry into it, or were you already leaning this direction before you got married?
This actually all started with plants. I became obsessed with plants. I opened a retail garden center. The more that I began to like dive into my community and what I really like to do, being outside, growing stuff, you know, when you have your own little homestead at home, you get chickens first, and then you get goats, and then you get sheep. And then, like I told you, we had tasted that meat about 5 years ago. And I was like, oh no, we've got to do this on a larger scale. And then, you know, farmers become animal enthusiasts, and we have a bunch of them as long as they're making us some money. And so that's how it started.
Yeah. Well, excellent. Excellent. That's a neat evolution of that. Like you said, normally everybody starts with the chickens and goes from there, but I love the idea of working in the with the vegetable business and growing that. So is that where you, when you decided to actually put out a placard and say this is a business now, was that when you were kind of doing market garden type stuff, or is that only when the protein came on?
We did the protein first, and then we added the market garden.
Oh, okay. So but you're sticking your toe in the water farming was on the veg side, but when it came time for business, you started with the protein side.
Yeah, and when we went to the markets and we started selling at farmers markets, we realized that more people were apt to come to your table, and the flow was a little bit easier if you had beautiful vegetables out to talk about, and then you could inform them about your proteins and what were you know, it was easier to share the protein side of things if you had something tangible for them to touch and look at.
That's a really good point. And I know I've talked about that some on the podcast, but I think it's good to underscore that. So when you're setting up in a farmer's market situation, that's kind of the one downside. That's one of the biggest downsides of protein. It's not like you can have a leg of chicken laying out there or a pork chop for people to look at. It doesn't go very long, but being able to,
frozen meat doesn't look that good all the time, but we know the quality is there and we know it is good, but frozen meat can be hard. And again, back with the Texas weather right now, sure, we could have some frozen meat out on the table, but come March, April, there's no way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so having that presentation with veg allows people to come in. And I would assume with like a lot of things, you know, the smaller price point items. So if you've got some produce that somebody come in and a couple bucks a pound or something for whatever, that helps that barrier be less. Somebody comes in, wants to look around. Oh yeah, okay, I'll buy some peppers from you, or buy some green beans, whatever the case may be. But then the opportunity to cross sell or upsell them with the protein, that's good. You're getting them in, and I assume you're doing some data capture there, so you can communicate with them about what's your latest inventory for the next section of the season, that type of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's super important. That's one of the things I wish I would have started 5 years ago is capturing data. I didn't actually start doing that till 2 years ago, and I really kicked myself in the butt. Emails are so important.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I agree. That's good that you're doing that. And that's the thing. Yeah, the best time to start collecting emails was yesterday. But if you can't do it then do it today for sure.
Absolutely.
So there's something else you had written in your pre-screening I think is interesting. So you all also have an on-farm store?
We do.
Okay, so how does that work, and how do you balance that with the farmer's market, and then, of course, the time you actually take to tend your farm?
It's a little crazy. No, okay, so our plant store, our retail garden store, and our farm store is only open Thursday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. I have someone who works for me on Saturday at the farm store, and I go to the markets. I've hired a bunch of different people, worked different people. It works better for the farmer to be at the farmer's market for our business model. So I go and do that. And that actually allows me the other days of the week to farm, to spray, to pick, to harvest, to wash, to pack, to do all, make my processing days runs. That all flows really, really well together. I will tell you, I was open 6 days a week when I first started, and it was an absolute nightmare because I would have to put a sign on the door and say, I'll be back. I had to go to the processor or whatever the case may be. And so when we switched over to that Thursday through Saturday model, it really, really pushed, like, this is the day that you can get the farm fresh goodies. You only come this day. And it's worked really well for our farm store.
And you probably didn't see a decrease in business then, did you?
No, and everyone always, that's the first thing they ask me. They're like, why aren't you open more to the sales? And I do have a couple people complain, and I understand that, but no, my sales have actually stabilized, and I can actually count on a specific amount on those 3 days a week. And that's, as a farmer, that means more to me than being open 6 days a week.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, that's kind of, in marketing, we call that a destination location, that there's a situation there. You've established a reputation where people realize, okay, it's worth waiting for the product because there's not an easy fill. And it'd be different if you're a convenience store and you're selling Twinkies. Somebody could just go down the corner and say, well, you're not open today. I'm just going to go down the corner and get that. But having that unique product and the reputation of having a good quality product allows you to test that waters. And what a great step to recognize that, okay, I'm running myself ragged here. This is not sustainable, and we have to make a change. Having the guts to do that, but then seeing the benefit of that, seeing that sales did not go away. In fact, they've stabilized, and probably now you can start growing more sales as people become more and more familiar with the process.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And another thing about what you said, the fact that you're creating sort of a destination, a hype for that day. I call my Fridays Farm Store Fridays, and I send out this beautiful email or put something together on social media. I'm like, here's the things we're going to have. You create that hype. And I feel like in the world that we're living in, people want that. And so that's what we're going for. So those 3 days a week is, you can only get it now. And honestly, that's true. We do sell out on those 3 days, and I'm not sure that I could be open 6 days a week and still present all the goodness in the quality way that I want to, if I weren't closed those other days to do all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the layout of your store. I know some people, when they think farm store, it's like, oh, that's huge infrastructure cost. Yeah. You've got tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars tied up in that. How is your store set up?
It's pretty basic. So it is a 24 by 30 building with a 10 foot porch. So it's really, let's just say it's 20 by 30. You walk in, I have shelves lining all the right side where I try to keep it super, super local. So I've got a local honey guy, a wonderful lady who makes tallow skincare, sourdough bread, olive oil. And then sometimes we'll have baked goods, things like that, farm fresh eggs, seasonings, and then we have coolers and a checkout counter all on the left. So we have three freezers and a refrigerator where the veggies are packed. And in the spring season, we'll have about two tables with tablecloths set out, and all the veggies will be packed in crates, you know, set up pretty so people can shop easily. It's not huge. I would say that if I were to do it again, I would build it bigger, but we all say that when we're done building something.
Right, right. And so you had this building built specifically for this. It wasn't an existing structure.
Actually, we had the building built when we first started with plants. So it was just an office building with a checkout counter. So we had to the freezers and coolers and stuff, those things are easy to bring in and get. We didn't really change the layout. We just kind of amended how we were doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's great. And I think it's one thing to look at that point of sale. Some people get a little nervous about it when we think about all the things that go along with point of sale, credit card acceptance and cash and all that type of stuff. But I assume, like most people now, that the technology, taking advantage of the technology, utilizing something like Square or some other point of sale software to take care of that, take care of all those details for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We accept all cards, cash, checks, I don't have all the apps, but, you know, I'll accept Venmo or something like that every once in a while. And what's really been a turning point for our business is allowing some pre-orders to happen before these 3 days a week. So yeah, really utilizing the internet and the software that's come out has been really beneficial to our business.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, along that same line of destination location, there's something else you had mentioned pre-screening that you all are looking at developing this year to get more people on farm. You want to expand on that?
Yeah. Are you talking about my U-Pick?
I'm talking about agrotourism. If that's something else, then let's talk about whichever one you want to. We'll get to both of them.
Yeah. So the agrotourism part of it, we had trialed a sunflower patch this summer where you did a U-Pick sunflowers, or photographers came out and took pictures in the sunflowers. It wasn't as big as a hit as what I would have liked. And as far as generating revenue, the numbers just weren't there. So I really had this big grandiose idea about come to the farm, the farm store Friday, pick a fresh bouquet, buy your farm fresh meat, see the pigs in the pasture, see the chickens running around that are laying the eggs that you're buying, and also possibly picking a few things from the vegetable garden. But really what I seen in that trial that I did with the sunflower kind of squashed those dreams a bit. But I will say that it sounds kind of like I'm tooting my own horn, but I'm not, I swear. My customers love to come to the store. I have two little girls and they're always there, and my customers always bring their kids and they play on the swing set and they run around in the greenhouses. So I think I'm still getting a little bit of that agro-tourism that I wanted without having the added expense of like, okay, here's a bucket to pick with, here's these aisles, wear your boots, things like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That they feel it's a warm and inviting place. You've opened the place up where they feel that, okay, I don't have to come in, immediately shop, pay and get out, because, you know, that's kind of the attitude, the vibe I'm getting here. It's a, you know, hang out, talk, do whatever. And I think that really gives people more of a comfort level. And then it builds a lot more trust and relationship with the farmer in that situation.
Yep. And that's what we're trying to do in this day and age. Connect the farmer to the consumer.
Very good. Very good. Well, so, So what are, as we're coming into this spring season, what are some future plans you see for this year, other than obviously completing that new section, you've got pigs. Are there areas you're looking to expand this year or in the next couple of years?
Yes, we are looking to expand all production of chicken, beef, and pork. We're not going to push on the lamb. It's such a specialty product. And also the beef, I'm not doing a huge push because raising purebred Angus, it does take 18 to 24 months for the things that we're raising. So that's not something like that's a yearly goal, but really pushing for a more premium pork. And also we're going to try a couple new processors, because what I'm finding is that with pork, it's not super easy to sell. And I think we were looking at the grocery store last night when we went grocery shopping, you know, at $2.68 a pound, and I'm raising pigs that cost way far more than that just to raise. It's really a hard sell to sell unless the customers can see it or know your quality or have that trust in you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I know exactly what you mean.
So we are looking to expand. And of course we'll get a lot of feeder hogs again, towards the end of this year. So I've got this one batch that I'm running through, and those will last me to sell at the markets, and then we'll gear up next fall. And then chickens, I know this is pasture pigs, but the pasture chickens have just taken off like wild cakes, and I cannot keep them in stock. So we're really, really amping that up. And we're raising more per month than we had in the past.
Yeah, no, and I'm not afraid to talk about anything other than pigs, because it is something I try to underscore, that you know, more polyculture helps with cash flow, and poultry is one of the best cash flows you can have, and it's one of those great ways to offset, especially when you're talking about Angus beef, when you're looking at cash not showing up for 18 months or 20 months type of thing, but you've got an 8 to 10 week life cycle on a chicken that's going to turn some cash. Then those things play really well together.
100%. Yeah. Some people look at us like we're crazy. Like, why are you doing everything? Why don't you pick one? And you know, it looks easy. And if it were in a book, it might sound easy to pick one, but when you're actually doing it, what you just said, the cash flow, cash is king. And we have to have that cash flow. These animals eat every single day, high quality grains that are not cheap. And so we just have to keep everything rolling to keep the big picture going.
Yeah. And so totally off the cuff here, but so thinking about that with your four areas of protein, and then of course your veg, and I know, I guess you do some, you're doing some plant sales as well, doing some perennials, that type of thing, or not?
Yes, sir. So we're open, the retail garden center, March through July, and those months are just fast and furious, 3 days a week, and we sell the heck out of vegetables, herbs, hanging baskets, fruit trees, citrus trees, and shrubs.
Yeah, so looking at all these different revenue streams, and all of them have different cash flow pluses and minuses. All of them have different potential, some peak season and stuff. Obviously, when chickens are on the farm on processing, did you all process on farm for your chickens, or do you send them out?
Oh, we take them to a USDA facility.
Hmm, very nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're blessed to have a USDA facility that does chickens. That's nice.
Oh, my gosh. No, I 100%. Did you know that we only have two in the state of Texas, though? I have to drive it's over 3 hours one way to take them. It's not that fun, but the quality at this place is phenomenal.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't know there's only two. We have zero in West Virginia, but we're a very small state. But
wow.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of people on-farm process, I'm capable, and we've done some for our family. I really like that safety net of a facility, and because chickens are not the cleanest animal to begin with, mm-hmm. and it takes the risk completely off of me having them done at this inspective facility.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So looking at that, when you have these different revenue streams, and of course, different cost centers, and this is kind of a business question. How do you manage those things? And I guess maybe the question is, when cash flow comes in, is that, hey, cash has to go into the, everything goes into the kitty, all one big pile, and we disseminate it where we need it type of thing. How well are you tracking your data to see what your best profit center is?
You know, I could be better in this area. I was just looking at numbers today with chicken and things. Chicken is the top seller, like you were saying. It's the greatest cash flow that we've done. I'm only tracking sales via a like a QuickBooks online system, and it is all going into one pot, and we just make it work. Like, you know, next week we have a huge feed order coming, and the feed order, you have to order every 30 days from this specific non-GMO, no corn, no soy feed that I feed. Mm. You have to order once a month. And so everything that I've made over the last month from the farmers markets and farm store days, it goes to this huge bulk feed order. And I would say at this point, since we've had the infrastructure since 2015 and we have the land, that's my highest cost is the feed for the animals right now.
Yeah. And so are all, so chickens, pigs, lamb and beef, are they all participating in that feed order, or is your beef just grass on the grass and hay only?
They're all participating because everything that we've got just weaned about 3 months ago. So we do like to give them some supplemental grain on top of grass and hay. Everything that we have is on grass, but we do supplement with a grain, everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So a 30 day feed order that takes up some room. So I assume you have some feed storage opportunity there on the farm.
Yeah, we have it's not the best. I wish one side was walled in, especially like for 10 inches of rain that we got the other day. But we order them in totes, and we make sure that we take all the precautions to keep them covered and keep, you know, the flies out of them and good airflow and things like that. So, yeah, we do have the storage for it.
Very good. Very good. So I do have to ask you, just because it's my own personal curiosity, because I'm sitting down looking at the numbers for my fall season with chickens. So are you selling holes and whole birds or cuts, a little bit of both, and what's selling out and what's one thing you can't get rid of?
Okay. This is so interesting with chickens, and maybe we can talk chickens. But whenever I got into the chickens, I thought the breasts were going to go and the leg quarters and all that. My holes sell better than my cuts do, but it's almost like I have to have the cuts to get people in. And then when they see the whole chicken, they're like, no, I'll just take the whole chicken.
Yeah.
But yeah. I really don't have something that I can't get rid of. At first it was backs. It was chicken backs. But then I created these recipe cards and I was like, hey, look, this is how you make your own broth. Yeah. You have to have a chicken back for that. You have to use the feet, you know, kind of created some like necessity around that. And we've been able to move them. One thing I can't keep in stock is wings. Those go like hotcakes. And obviously, you know, if you're raising like 300 birds at a time, you don't get that many wings because they put 20 to 30 in a pack.
Right, right. Yeah.
That many packages. Yeah. What about for you? What doesn't move? How do you sell yours?
That's really interesting. Yeah. So I agree with you. The whole birds go better than I expected, but sometimes... Like we had just an incredible year. I don't know if it's because of the rain and the pasture was in really good shape, or just got some great genetics on the Cornish cross. But I had a lot of 9 and 10 pound birds finished, and that was a little tough for people to swallow because I do 4 1/4 a pound. So when you're buying a $42 bird, some people are like, well, yeah, I think I want the 6 pounder. So I sold out of my 5 to 7 pounders much, much faster. And so they even came in and I actually had to discount the 9 and 10 pounders enough to make it cost effective for people. But I mean, you're basically cooking a turkey at that point when it comes to processing a whole bird. Yeah.
That's amazing. 9 or 10 pounds. Yeah. Ours are finishing out. I'm getting back on average a 3 to 3.5 pound bird.
Yeah.
And what I've found is that, and I'm raising Cornish cross twos, the customers are really happy with that. And me, we're a family of 4. So I love that size of bird because I can put it in the crock pot and it's 2 to 3 mils and we're good to go.
Yeah.
Sure. But still, I would love to have a 9 or 10 pound bird. That would be amazing.
Yeah. We do our own processing on farm, and it's one of those things like, okay, this guy won't even fit in the killing cones.
I bet you the blocks are so big too.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to lay a board across the killing cone station. It's a 6-station setup, and we have to lay a big 2x6 across it to just keep them from rolling out. Because they just don't sit low enough in the cone. But anyway, yeah. So running into that is interesting. And what you said about the recipe card is just, you just hit the nail on the head. And that's something that Kelly and I have looked at. And this is something that's not just for chickens. So there's you saying, hey, get back to the pigs. We're going there in a second. But not just for chicken. This is for anything where you're dealing with all the cuts. You know, so like in depending on your community, depending on the demographic makeup of your customers, you may find people that are like, oh yeah, chicken feet all day long. We love making bone broth. And you have other people look at you like, you're nuts. I have no idea. Why would you even have chicken feet on your web store? I get that question from time to time. But then even looking at pork, when people are thinking about jowls or trotters or some of the liver or all the different, the leaf lard, I have so many people that will buy a whole hog from me and I'll say, do you want any of the lard? No, I don't want any of that. Just throw it away. I'm like, are you nuts? And just think, yeah, the waste that comes from that. But we have to educate our customers to say, no, you do want this. It's not gross. Here's what you can use it for, and just give it a try. And then you get an educated customer there that comes back and appreciates what they're buying, and they see more value from it. So like with a hog, where we sell a whole and a half at hanging weight, if you keep the lard or you don't keep the lard, you don't keep the back fat, you're paying for it anyway, because I'm charging on the hanging weight. So if you say, no, throw that leaf lard away or throw that back fat away, I don't want it. Okay, well, you paid for it. So I think it, when people realize that and say, oh, but so why do I want this? Well, let me show you what you can do with it. And I think that's really important. So I love the idea you're doing that, and you're seeing that actually bear fruit in the sales of your chicken. And I'm sure that goes across the board with everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think education is empowerment. That's all we can do. And what I found too with the whole and half hogs, my more experienced customers, I guess that's the term we could use, or people who maybe bought a whole or half, not even just for me, but someone else before, those customers for us, they're like, yes, we do want the fat. Yes, we do want the ham hocks. Can you cut them like this? But it does take a lot of education. Even our ground pork, people are like, what? And I'm like, oh my gosh, ground pork is like the best ground meat ever.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, egg rolls. You can eat egg rolls every single day, y'all.
Yeah, it is amazing, because people are like, well, I want sausage, so why would I order ground pork that I got to put my own seasoning in? And I'll even say, well, have you ever had a sausage seasoning that you liked or you didn't like and you wanted to try something different? Well, ground pork, if you're feeling froggy, you can make your own sausage mixes and play around with it, see what the kids like. But then when you open their eyes to, ooh, if like up here, this is a big whitetail country, so people hunt deer all the time, so you have the really lean venison. And there's nothing better than taking a 50-50 ratio of venison and ground pork and making some burgers out of that. I mean, that's enough to make you want to smack your mama. They're so good.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I actually had a customer the other day. I traded him some ground pork for that same mixture that he had done. It was not with our pigs, but I was like, that is the perfect ratio for burgers. Mm. And with ground pork, it's so versatile. But you really have to educate. Like, people will come to the booth, and again, I'll have the recipe cards, and I'm like, here's how you make egg roll in a bowl. Because most people that are buying pastured, non-GMO, they're health conscious, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
So egg roll in a bowl has veggies and meat in it. And I'm like, you can put ground pork in chili. You can use it in taco meat. You could put taco seasoning in it. And I think there's like this veil that has to be lifted of, oh my gosh, you can do whatever you want with this ground meat and make it taste however you want.
Oh yeah, I think it's fantastic, especially as you find some of these people that do like to, they're foodies, they do like to hang out in the kitchen, they do like to experiment with some things, and then you open their eyes to the fact, okay, with ground pork, you kind of have a blank canvas that you can go in a direction of, hey, you got a grinder, you make your own bratwursts. I mean, I love making beer brats with our ground pork and just playing around with that. And some people even kind of freak out and I guess I got to watch how I say this, but there's times for your own personal consumption, you can take a frozen pack of meat and you can do something with it, process it in a way, and you can refreeze it. And it doesn't degrade the quality. It actually is still edible when it comes back out. So it's there's all kinds of options you can do with that. And I think once people realize it, they see the versatility of those specific cuts.
Yeah, 100%. So how do you all sell? Do you just do holes and halves, or do you do cuts at farmers markets? How do you sell your meat?
So we do cuts as well. This is our first year. We've been doing this for 12 years now, 13. Oh my goodness, I can't keep track of it. But we normally did holes and halves specifically because we couldn't find a good USDA processor. We were having to go out of state, and I just didn't want to mess with that. So they would come and go. So we'd try cuts off and on. But this year is the first year we've got a got a good, I say good, you know, knock on wood type of thing. They're new, so they're kind of working out some of the kinks, but a good USDA processor that's only a 40-minute drive for us. And so we've done cuts starting this summer with home delivery. So everything is ordered online through our website. And they, people know that when they order from like a Sunday through a Wednesday, the Wednesday's the cutoff, then they'll get a home delivery on that Saturday. And so we have pork, we have beef, we have chicken, and then we also we have maple syrup because I have a friend who has a sugar shack, a neighboring farm, and then we also have baked goods. So my son's really into baking, so he has a pretty good recipe of items there that he sells. So that's how we've been doing those cuts, and it's you know, we're learning quite a bit from it. The value added to the home delivery I thought was going to be a grand slam, and it's just not taking off to the speed I thought it would. But yeah, so there's things we're learning from that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And all those value added products, though, it really makes. You know, it makes sense for someone to buy. Like for me, if you were local to me, I totally, you got me at maple syrup. But while I'm on your website for maple syrup, maybe I might see breakfast sausage and all I can think about is pancakes and breakfast sausage and right, maple exactly. syrup. So all those value added things, that's really unique. And baked goods are so popular right now.
Yeah.
This is like a sourdough craze and bread phase. Everyone's into that. People love that in the farm stores too.
Yeah. My son, his most popular, you know, and there's stuff that's seasonal, of course. During November, we were about to pull our hair out from pumpkin pies that were going in and out. But looking at things like bagels, I never dreamed that in our community that bagels would be as popular as they are. But it's something that has, you know, a decent shelf life. It's not just a sweet, so it's not like somebody's like, oh, you know, I got to watch the blood sugar here. I can't order sweets again from Red Tool House. But the bagels is a good. It's a good weekly thing, and we get some regular orders from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope the home delivery takes off a little bit, and is that an incline for you? That's we just started a local drop here, and I'm having to kind of take a little profit loss and a knock on the head when I drive every week. But I think that if you just stay consistent, plus when I get to go to town, I get to get iced coffee, so I can't complain too much. but you just stay consistent, and it'll build.
Yeah, and that's where volume really comes in. So we're kind of doubling down on this. In February, we have what's called the Winter Blues Farmers Market, and it is literally a one time a year farmers market that lasts for 6 hours. But it is in our Coliseum Civic Center in our capital city, which is the city that we're close to. So it is wall to wall people. And it's nuts. I haven't gone there because I'm afraid I'm going to end up shooting somebody because it's just so crazy. But this will be our first year of having a booth there. And we're really going to double down on promoting the delivery because the majority of the people will be in our delivery area that will be frequenting that. So we're hoping that this will be an opportunity to do a huge data capture. We can do sales while we're there. So hopefully we don't sell out completely, although it'd be nice, but obviously I want to have product for the customers that decide they want to order from us. But it's going to be a challenge because it's a very high-end farmer's market, so it's more of a trade show, so we got to have all the booth things that go along with that. I've got to have print collateral, I've got to have all those things in place to look as professional as possible, but also still have product and still have the opportunities for people to order in the future.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. That's great. That's going to be a huge, it's going to be a huge thing for the delivery. Just convenience. People want that anyways.
Yeah. So that's what we're hoping. And we'll be detailing that in some upcoming podcast episodes as well, because it's kind of a morbid curiosity I'm sure people have. You know, is it a train wreck? Does it actually work out? And we're hoping to be as transparent as possible with that when we get to more details.
Yeah, that's going to be super exciting. So do y'all farm full time?
No, I've been self-employed for 20 years, and so it's everything kind of blurs. but no, I have a marketing company that I've owned for the last 16 years, and so that's kind of the main gig. But between the farm and the social media aspects, all that's kind of runs together. So I find myself doing business or marketing consultant for somebody who's trying to start a farm on social media. So it's really kind of weird how it runs together. So I'm on farm a lot because I work out of my home office most of the week. So yeah, it wouldn't be fair to say I'm a full-time farmer because that would mean we're doing a lot more revenue than we are from the farm. But yeah, everything's kind of meshed together.
Well, yeah, that term's loose because I find that most people have an off-farm job too whenever they do this.
Yeah, I always joke, behind every good pasture pig farmer is a spouse that has a nursing degree. That's usually how it seems to shake out.
It's kind of true, but in our situation, we're both self-employed, and so that's why when you asked me about the financial thing, I was like, come on, Troy, man. You know, I'm just making it happen over here, okay?
Right, exactly. Yeah, fake it till you make it. That's how we do it here as well. All right. Well, I want to be sensitive to your time, Stephanie, but I do want to close out with you and ask you the question that I ask everybody. And what is your most favorite aspect of raising pigs on pasture?
Oh my goodness. Okay. My favorite thing about raising pigs on pasture is whenever you bring the new piglets out of the barn, because we farrow in sow crates, and when you bring them out to the pasture and they find the acorns under the tree. And pigs love acorns. They're like little gummy bears to them, or that's what I think, because my kids love gummy bears. And they will just sit over there and crunch them and eat them. And it's really like a tranquil thing to sit there and watch them. That's my favorite thing about them. And the second favorite thing, because I have to add too, is that they're straight wild. And that's just like how I like to live. It's just a little crazy. Pigs are crazy.
They are. They remind me, the personality, especially as the piglets, they remind me as a cross between like a cat and a dog. So they have the personality of a dog where they're friendly and boisterous, but then they just get absolutely nuts sometimes like cats. You know, like a cat just says, I got to be in this next room right now. And they you know, tear up everything to get there. And it's hilarious. The piglets do that. And I have a short video on my YouTube channel that I watch it more than anybody else does, I think, because I just laugh and laugh and laugh. But it was probably the third year that we had pigs, and we had it was a Hampshire Duroc cross, and so we had all these little belted piglets that were blondish red in color. So it was just the best mix, you know. It was like a bleached out Hampshire. And there was one that we called Fergus. And Fergus was just, I mean, that pig was hopped up on crack, it seemed like. He would just run around, spin around in circles. But there was this video clip in particular. He's standing there. He just had just done a lot of tail chasing and kind of running around with somebody else. And he lays down real quick, and he's just looking. And then he jumps up, turns left, and runs full speed right into a T-post. And it's just like, boom! And it just, every time I see it, it just cracks me up. And I think, this is why... I mean, this is one of the many reasons. Obviously, I love bacon, but this is one of the many reasons why I love having pigs. They are so daggone entertaining.
That's so funny. Yeah, we call them the zoomies when they do that. They've got the zoomies and they run around like that. Yeah. I'm going to go watch that now on YouTube when we get off of here.
Yeah. You watch. Yeah, it just cracks me up because he's if he wasn't so darn tasty, he'd still be on the farm. But they are hilarious. Yeah, when they have the opportunity to run around and play and be pigs, it just is fantastic for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, Stephanie. And if somebody wants to find out more about Vincent Farms, or we really didn't throw this out here, but you kind of have another business element associated with your veg side, which is River View Growers. If somebody wants to find out more about either of those, can they find you online somewhere?
Yeah, it's best to look us up at riverviewgrowers.com, or I'm super active on both Instagram and Facebook at River View Growers. So yeah, follow along. Super fun. I love social media to stay in contact with people and also meet new people and new farms.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and I pray you have a good evening. Well, all right. Well, I really appreciate Stephanie coming on the podcast. And again, Stephanie, I apologize. We recorded that back in January. I apologize it took so long to get it out, but there it is. And I appreciate her sharing her experiences with us on the podcast. As always, we're going to keep plowing along. Some of you all have reached out to me about interview suggestions and topic suggestions, and I am. I've got you in my list. As we get these queued up and get them scheduled, then we'll do so. And by all means, please reach out if you have any questions, Troy at redtoolhouse.com, or just go to the Pastured Pig website. You can check those things out. The Facebook group is still functioning, still working. There's been a lot of good discussion there, the Pastured Pig Facebook group, so be sure to check that out as well. All right, well, next week, I hope to be back next Monday because I'm going to stop this recording and start the very next one. So hopefully we'll be ready. You can hear my voice starting to crack already. So I'll be back next week with another interview. And then the following week, Rob Dowdle from Dowdle Family Farms, he and I are going to sit down and have a very detailed discussion about processing woes and how to address those. So I think you guys will enjoy that conversation. All right. Well, I pray everyone have a great week.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of the Pastured Pig Podcast. To learn more about our podcast or to submit topics or recommend guests for future episodes,
visit redtoolhouse.com.